0866 20 5000. That's how you get in touch with us, with your WhatsApps and texts. 0866 20 5000. If you're listening outside the Republic, of course, 00353 8660 20 5000, or call us on 07491 20 5000. Again, from outside the Republic, 00353 7491 20 5000. Your emails from anywhere in the world, straight into us here at comments@highlandradio.com, and feel free to interact with us across our social media. We are fully interactive. A caller says, I have a real issue with this. What do others think? I have an account with AIR for almost 30 years. I called this morning to question a bill which has gone up for no apparent reason, but they would not talk to me about it because I refused to give them my date of birth. Also, it's only today that I noticed that I'm paying €6 to get a paper bill sent to me. Imagine paying anyone to send you a bill if they want paid. Surely the bill should be part of that service. If I went into a shop today and bought some goods, there is no way they would, or I would, give my date of birth to simply pay the bill. What do you think about that? I suppose they have to identify who it is if you're inquiring after the bill. And I mentioned last week, if you go and get a money order out of the post office, you have to supply your date of birth as well. On Friday the 21st of April, I was driving into Letterkenny at 8:21 a.m. and was fined for driving at 71 miles per hour at Maharbeg School. My issue here is the speed is 100 and there was not any light up signs to say the speed was dropped at school time to 60. I have raised this with the Gardaí and Go Safe Van crew, but I'm getting nowhere. Did anyone else get these fines, and are they willing to join me in a joint complaint that the flashing reduced speed signs was not operational? I wonder why not. I have seen some lag, and I'm not sure who's responsible for them. I have seen some lag before in the clocks going forward, but that gap is too wide there, isn't it? It's probably not that. So they were passing the school at Maharbeg. They claimed that the temporary 60 speed limit lights were not flashing, but they were done for doing 71 in ordinarily 100 miles per hour area, kilometres per hour. You know what they're saying. So is that something you've come across? 086 60 25,000 or 07491 25,000. This caller is looking for others who may be affected to get involved in a joint complaint. A caller says, earthquakes are just God's way of telling us he's peed off and we're all you-know-whatted. Okay, I hope not. Maybe we should listen. Brendan Devaney's going to join us now. Are you there, Brendan? No, he's not there quite yet. So we'll go to Brendan Devaney in a second. We're going to talk to him about what's coming up on the DL Debates podcast. That's coming up for you very, very shortly. Right. So I've always been taught you go to work every day, earn an honest living, build your home and provide as best you can and set an example for your children. 2 years ago, we had to strip the external leaf on our home as it was cracking from mica. Myself and wife decided to use our savings before moisture would eventually leak inside. Mean total demolition. Money couldn't pay to see our home tipped down. It cost 40k. Now the government has what seems an unlimited pot of money to house Ukrainians and other nationals. How can we tell our children to work and earn an honest living when deep down I feel like telling them to turn 18, apply for a social house and have a cozy life, as now more than ever. A working man is a foolish man. Thanks, Greg. I understand where you're coming from. I understand your frustration, but there's enough money to do what we have to do and to properly fix your house as well. Right, Brendan Devaney, are you there? Brendan, can you hear me? We are live on Highland Radio. Good morning. You have to put me on speaker.
Yeah, I don't know what I've done wrong there. I hardly thought it there. Carolyn tried to ring me and I've knocked you onto something else.
Well, I'll kick you out and bring you back. I'm just looking at his ear. Oh, my word. I think he's cleaned them, which is one positive. Right, we'll get Brendan back in. Can you hear me a bit better now, Brendan?
That's it. Good, man. You're sure.
I never, ever want to see your ear close up like that ever again. That was a one-time only thing.
Sorry.
Come here. Has football gone to pot?
At the minute, what do you mean?
Just in terms of watching the games, one-sided affairs, pointless for the team that's going to get thrashed, pointless for the team that's going to win by a wide margin, a pointless spectacle to watch. That's if they're even live, because a lot of the games you expect to see are on GEA Go, and yet RTE will pay an absolute fortune to show 4 hours of a foreign king getting crowned, so to speak. I don't mean that controversially. And some games we can't see, and then the games we can are crap.
Yeah,
Yeah. Listen, Greg, this has been happening for a while. Obviously, the provincial championships are on the way out. They'll be gone soon. So you just have that uneven situation. A number of teams are, as we know, we have four divisions in Ireland, and in the championship you end up with top teams playing bottom teams, and over a number of years. That's why the new championship format's in, and the provincial council still are persisting with this. Of course, the Ulster championship's the only one that's of any merit and any one teams want to win, but that's not going to be enough to keep the other three going. I mean, if you look, even at Connacht, they're slightly competitive, but they don't really care about actually winning the Leinster Cup. You know, it's not that big of a thing. It would be to someone like Sligo, don't get me wrong. But to the other teams in there, the bigger picture is all about the Sam Maguire. So I think provincials will be gone soon. The quicker they go now, the better, because they're devalued as it is. And it'll stop this situation where top teams are playing lower teams. And you're seeing what you're seeing at the weekend there, which you're right, is a waste of time.
Yeah, something has to be done. And I mean, we might resist that most up here, but we have to look at it on a national level, I suppose, in terms of the games and the competitiveness. Just because we've six relatively competitive counties, we're not going to be able to hold back the direction of traffic here then.
Yeah, that's a great, listen, it's the only way it has to be. And I think it's best for everybody to know, because a lot of people's questioning about this championship, about what's the new format. Now, it'll take a wee bit of getting used to, and like everything, it'll take a wee bit of tweaking, but certainly the provincials now are basically getting in the way of the real championship. And it'd be better, I think, for the structure if we have the league, and if you do well in the league and you go up the divisions, you get into Sam Maguire, and that's how it needs to be. Even this thing we have left in there, Greg, about the likes of Sligo being in the All-Ireland series now, because they made a provincial final in that. I mean, those things are pointless to leave that in there, because you're knocking out a team in Division 2 that might be able to compete in that All-Ireland group. And in fairness to Sligo, they are on up, Greg, don't get me wrong. They've back-to-back under 20 titles. Their colleges are doing down there. They are on the build, but they're not going to be capable of or surviving in the group phase of the championship. Now, they might prove me wrong. I mean, a couple of our lads are down there, Colin McFadden, obviously, and big Paul Durkin, two legends of Donegal football, is down helping out and coaching in Sligo and that. So listen, they are on the upgrade, but it's a huge jump, as we're seeing, for top teams and lower teams. If you even look at the Hammer and Armagh meted out to the team that beat us down, we'll not go into where Donegal football's at the minute, but generally that is what's happening. Even a team that's Division 3, almost got under 2, getting hammered out the gate by a team like Armagh, which is a genuine All-Ireland contender.
But where is the... I mean, if there's such an overhaul of the championship coming up and constantly having to twiddle it and to make it watchable and to make it entertaining, and yet we have there what seems to be actually a really good setup in the league, you know, where is... in terms of the hierarchy, like for the fan, where you're seeing your team play teams of a normally an equal strength, and there is that what we're familiar with, that threat of dropping down, and now all the conversation is, can we get back up into Division 1, or are we going to slip into Division 3, or will we find our feet in Division 2? You know, it's interesting. That's not where we want to be yet. This championship, which I actually really can't even understand, the draw that was just made, right, in terms of who plays who and why, right? And as I say, I'm interested in your view, because you are GEA through and through, and you know better than I. I'm just really casual. Like, at what point then does the league become, for more people, genuinely more entertaining and important than the championship?
Well, I suppose, Greg, the league is the league. It's a pre-championship type competition. I think the reason people have got excited about it this last number of years is just for what you're saying, because the provincials have been, there's been a lot of mismatches in it. So people have kind of enjoyed the league. It's a bit more, I suppose, there's less tension in it in terms of, you know, it's not do or die in each game. And sometimes teams play a wee bit open because of that. And you also have the novelty of, you know, top teams in the country coming here and us going to play other big teams that you don't get to play in the championship generally. But that's changing now, as I say. You're going to get far more teams playing each other, big teams in the championship. And basically it's four groups of four. You know, the top team goes through, the two and three play each other off in a pre-quarter-final game. So basically the three teams at the end all have a chance. Only the team at the very bottom of the group are out.
Yeah, but there's something like 22 games to get rid of four teams?
Yeah, but I suppose that's what you're talking about, Greg. If you're on about the best teams playing each other, you're going to get a lot of that happening. Now, right, how okay. much that is championship remains to be seen, because we've seen it even with Super 8s now, Greg. You can have an odd dead rubber game on there. You can have, you're not going to get the championship until it's knockout. And yeah. even at that, for me, once you get the quarterfinal, semi-final, those are games on their own, anyway. So that thing, I mean, I'm old enough, as you know, Greg, to have played in knockout championship when it was one game and it was bang, and there's obviously something a bit electrifying about that. You're never going to get that anymore, and that was quite unfair, I suppose, on teams, top teams. You know, you had one game in the championship and you had some of the best teams in Ireland gone. But then, you know, people argue they went back to their clubs and went on with that. So really, there was a hunger for bigger teams playing bigger teams, and we're just at that, getting that phase now, Greg. I don't think it'll, you know, you mightn't say it'll be perfectly right, but basically yeah. the league, the top two divisions make up the championship, basically, Greg. That's where it's at. I mean, okay. they left the card down, then if you won the Tailteann Cup, you get into the All-Ireland series like Westmeath as well, which I think is fair enough. I think that needs to be left in there. But apart from that, I think it should be left as the top, basically the top two divisions are playing off for All-Ireland, and the bottom two play for the Tailteann.
Right, okay. On to the show tonight. We'll get to live stories in a minute, but obviously you'll be getting reaction to the weekend's action. You were at the minor game, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in Clonus at the Donegal Miners Cup short against Monaghan, unfortunately, and I was in Lifford yesterday at Donegal Ladies. We're beaten by Armagh. So listen, no good news coming at the minute in Donegal GA. The only people flying the flag, I think, at the minute, or you'd have to say, is our hurlers are on the up and up generally. And I suppose we're turning a life story to that, to a hurling legend this evening.
Right, Joe Boyle's the man in question.
Yeah, 17 years at Donegal. That's a fine footballer as well. Bert lad, you know, he's four All-Irelands and captain Donegal doing All-Ireland as well. And unbelievable time in sport in Donegal. I mean, a great story, a great lad too, off the pitch. So I'd done Nadine Doherty a couple of weeks ago in terms of the Donegal ladies legend. Then we went to Colin McFadden. So now we're on to hurling. I think that's important, Greg, in the show. You know, we are a GAA show. We need to promote. Obviously, football's a huge thing in Donegal, but there's some fantastic work done at hurling as well. So I thought it was nice to, for the first three stories, to have three legends across our GAA world in terms of ladies hurling and football.
Yeah, and Joe will have a great insight into that whole journey of Donegal hurling, not only his hurling career. That's going to be fascinating. The show's live just after 7 p.m. news tonight. It's podcast, of course, on our website, highlandradio.com, so you can listen to it if you're training or going out for a walk after it's broadcast. And listen to the DL debates in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. As always, Brent, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks for your insights. Take care of yourself. Charlie, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the call today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, we heard from a listener earlier on who found themselves with €700 credit on their electricity bill. You're in a similar position, Charlie.
Yeah, mine's for over €800 credit. I didn't realise it until about a month ago. And I have a direct debit, you see, with Electric Ireland. And they were taking money out of my account all the time, obviously. And I was in credit all the time. And the government gave us some money, apparently, but it was to put it on directly into the electricity board's account. So anyway, I rang them up, and they tell me that I'm in credit, and that from now on, they'll stop my direct debit, and I'll not be paying anything until the 700, 800 I have is gone.
Okay, but so are you happy with...
You can't get it. Pardon?
Oh, sorry, I was literally, you're going to answer the question I was about to ask. Are you happy with that, knowing that your power costs are covered for a few months, or would you prefer to be able to get access to that money, Charlie?
Well, thanks be to God, I don't just need the money right away, but if I needed it, I couldn't get it anyhow. So they just phoned me up, they told me they'll cancel the direct debit and that I'll not be paying any more out of that for whatever time it takes to get rid of this $800. So it's my own fault in a way, because I wasn't checking my bill, obviously. Like, I just direct debit, and I never even thought about it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there must be a lot more other people out there in the same bracket as myself.
Exactly. And others, too, that would probably could do with that €700 or €800 to go towards food and all, because, you know,
that's what I was thinking about. You know, there are people who would dire straits who would need that.
Yeah. Because this sounds like compulsory saving, and you don't need that. People want to be able to manage their finances themselves.
Well, I mean, they were definitely taking the money out, and they shouldn't have been taking it out, obviously. But that's the way it was, and that you can't get it back apparently. And but people would probably need it. The people who were getting this money originally were in dire straits because they couldn't pay for the electricity bills. And of course, I was trying to save a little bit too on, you know, cutting down on electricity, mm-hmm. obviously. So I was quite surprised when I checked back how long my credit was, how long I had the credit. So it's worthwhile mentioning it, that other people out there may be in the same boat.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether they can get it back or not.
Well, you see, they have your money, effectively.
Yeah, that's
you
right. Know, they have your money. They have their money.
And Charlie, have you checked your bills? What's your bills been like on average the last wee while?
Oh, God, I haven't got this thing in front of me now, unfortunately. But if I'd have known that, I could have.
No. I'm just wondering how many will you get 4 months out of the 800? I hope you do.
Certainly will, yeah. Good. No doubt about that at all, you know. Because, as a matter of fact, it was well over 800 at one stage.
Right.
So it's been reduced a little bit already.
You'll be all right for a sub, Charlie, if I get short, will you?
Well, sure, I'll meet you some night out town, yeah.
All right, buy me a pint, that'll do. How's that?
Anyway, all the people who may be interested in the whole thing, that's all.
Of course. And it's very interesting. You've actually explained it all, and it makes a lot of sense. So I really appreciate you coming on and making that a little bit clearer for us, Charlie. Good man. Have a lovely day.
Oh, okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye, Charlie. Thank you very much indeed. Any similar stories there? 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right. I'll get to that next bit. I'm going to join in now on the programme by Donal Kavanagh from the newsroom, because the Northern Ireland's elections 2023, we're going to find out all about what's going on here. And Donal Kavanagh, of course, from the newsroom and an election aficionado, as you would all know, joins us now to try and make some sense of it all, Donal.
Yeah, we've been looking specifically, Greg, at the Derry City and Strabane District Council area, because obviously it's the one where we would have the biggest reach into in Northern Ireland. It's a council area that sort of takes in obviously the whole of Derry City, the whole of Strabane and the surrounding areas as well, beyond City of Derry Airport and then out towards Victoria Bridge, then out Castle Dergahiar and out that direction as well. So it's a very big sort of council area. So we're going to take a bit of a focus on that one today.
So before we get to that, what elections are taking place and when? It's on the 19th of May, and this is to determine really your councillors.
This is the makeup of the local councils across Northern Ireland. It's not in any way linked to Stormont, so these are the councils that operate and continue to operate and will operate after this month as well. So there is a possibility of maybe assembly elections in the not too distant future, but we can park that to one side. This is local elections. That they've had them in England and they've had them in Scotland and Wales already. So it's the North's turn later on this month, and as you said, it's the 19th.
That's the counting, isn't it? The voting's on the 18th.
Oh, sorry, yes, yeah. you're right.
No,
yeah.
That's my mistake.
I always pay more attention to the count.
Exactly.
Than I
you're right, and I misled everyone. I'll mislead. Right, okay, so just then into the wider context, I presume before we get into the nitty-gritty, we can only presume too the likes of the DUP will be watching very closely, because I presume what's been happening, as you say, these are people that continue to work,
yeah.
But presumably what's happening in the general political landscape may well be reflected somewhat in the local election. So it is an important marker for the big parties?
It is. I mean, and what's going to be important, for instance, you mentioned the DUP. One of the questions the DUP are going to be asking is, you know, can we consolidate our support, or will we lose seats, for instance, to people like Jim McAllister's TUV, the Unionist Voice? Are we going to lose to the UUP, for instance? What will the verdict be on our stance in Stormont? And inevitably, some people will try to turn this into a referendum on Stormont. Now, the parties themselves will be at pains to stress that they're campaigning on local issues in local areas, yeah. And they're putting up the people they believe best in each district electoral area to do the job in that area, but inevitably it will be seen as a referendum.
And where those votes go as well, because, you know, one can't presume that someone who's disenchanted with the DUP might go to the UUP if there's an option there, or from Sinn Féin to the SDLP, or between Sinn Féin and the DUP. I mean, you have other parties in there. Yeah. Two are in a couple of areas, which will be interesting to see how they fare. And Alliance is a good option for a lot of people who maybe want to get away from the sort of
and Alliance is one of the interesting ones, because if you look down, I've been looking at all the wards in Derry City and Strabane, and in the places where Alliance are gaining, Alliance the last time gained from the SDLP, and the Alliance gained from the DUP, so a lot of people looking for that middle ground will possibly look toward Alliance. You do have, obviously, changes within unionism, changes within nationalism, but it's never quite as simple. And Derry is always an interesting one because Derry is seen as the last real political stronghold of the SDLP, and there's been an ongoing for the past number of years. You know, SDLP versus Sinn Féin, the SDLP had the Westminster seat in the form of Mark Durkan. That was taken by Alicia McCallion. Then Colm Eastwood of the SDLP took that back, and there was a very, very large post-mortem within Sinn Féin when they lost that seat. And that led to sort of sweeping changes across Sinn Féin and Derry. That happened just under 2 years ago in 2021. And maybe this council election is going to be a test of that, to see can Sinn Féin consolidate their strength in the city. Because, I mean, Sinn Féin will tell you that they want to get that Westminster seat back in Derry because they feel they shouldn't have lost it to Colm Eastwood when they did.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of rebuilding to be done by that party and that part of the world. So before we get into the runners and riders too, would there be a sense that people feel more connected to the councils in Northern Ireland than they might in the Republic, in that, you know, the council have seemingly in the north more direct control over, you know, local issues? I mean, if you think about what's within the gift of elected representatives in the Republic, but, you know, you're talking bin charges, mm-hmm. you know, leisure services, all that type of stuff. Do you think there's a stronger connection between the electorate and councils in NI rather than ROI?
It depends, Greg. Because, for instance, like in the ROI, for instance, councils have a say in things like planning, which they don't in Northern Ireland. Likewise, housing. All the council will be consulted on things like housing north of the border, but it's the housing executive who are going to make those decisions. So things like housing, things like planning, as you said, they'll actually be, there's more council involvement south of the border. Now, as you said correctly, in terms of the refuse collection, in terms of recycling centres, there's a lot more direct council involvement in that. And there's also a lot more direct council involvement in things like running the leisure centres, whereas what tends to happen in the Republic, if you take, say, Aura in Letterkenny, it's owned by the council, but it's operated by a private company on behalf of the council. Again, on Grain and Theatre is owned by the council, but it's operated almost independently with its own board of directors, on which the council has representation, obviously. Yeah. But whereas the councils will have more direct involvement, where people will have a lot more sort of contact with the council, is the council does set a rate and the people pay that rate directly to the council. Now here we pay our property taxes, etc., to government, but you know, you're actually paying a rate in Northern Ireland, and that rate is set by the council. Here there are commercial rates and water charges for businesses. In Northern Ireland, when the council sets a rate, it's a rate across the board.
Yeah, but you actually know what you're getting for it, unlike the property tax. Okay, so shall we go through the various districts then? Do you want to start with Derry City and Strabane District Council?
As I said, I was looking specifically at Derry City and Strabane District Council. They have seven districts, electoral areas, and the first one is Ballyarnet. We have 6 seats, 9 candidates. It takes in areas around about Coolmore, Shantello, Carnhill, Gallia and Skeig. In 2019, at the last election, they returned 3 SDLP, 2 Sinn Féin and 1 Inntu. And in that instance, it was SDLP and Inntu gaining and Sinn Féin and Independents losing. You now move on, if we stay in the city, we'll go to Foilside, which takes in Ballymacroarty, Northland, Rosemount, Springtown. 2019, of the 5 seats, we had 2 SDLP, 1 Sinn Féin, 1 People Before Profit and 1 Independent. 8 candidates contesting this time. Again in Foilside, Sinn Féin losing, this time losing to People Before Profit. If you go to the Moor, which is Creggan Brandywell, I mean, really at the heart of Derry, you have 5 seats, 9 candidates this time. In 2019, you had 2 Sinn Féin, 1 SDLP, 1 People Before Profit and 1 Independent. Again in the Moor, that was a People Before Profit gain from Sinn Féin. You go then to Fawn, which is in the Waterside, 5 seats, 10 candidates this time, New Buildings, Eglinton, Claudie, that area. You had 2 DUP, 1 SDLP, 1 Sinn Féin, 1 Alliance, and that was an Alliance gain from the SDLP. Now, interesting, in Fawn, both DUP councillors subsequently left the party. Graham Wark went independent, Ryan McCready joined the UUP. So at this point in time, DUP had 2 elected last time in Fawn. At this point, they have no representation. They're going to be really, really pushing to get seats back there in Fawn. If you go to Sperrin, which is an interesting one, Sperrin takes in Strabane Town, takes in Plumbridge, Artigarvan, Dunamana, 7 seats, 14 candidates. This is going to be a really, really tight one. In 2019, 2 Sinn Féin, 2 DUP, 2 Independent, 1 SDLP. Again, in Sperrin, it was an independent gain from Sinn Féin. Go to the Waterside in Derry. You have 7 seats, 10 candidates. This is Drumahoe, Victoria, Caw, Ebrington, Lisnagelvin, that area directly across from the city side. 2019, two DUP, two SDLP, one Sinn Féin, one UUP, one Alliance. Again, an Alliance gain, but this time Alliance gaining from the UUP. Finally, go to Derg, your token Newton Stewart, Caletor, Sine Mills, Castle Derg, Claddy, that general area. In 2019, two Sinn Féin, one DUP, one UUP, one SDLP, and that was an SDLP gain from Sinn Féin. So you have this interesting situation at present where Sinn Féin and the SDLP are tied, 11 councillors each in Derry City and Strabane, and that's unique in Northern Ireland. DUP 5, Independent 5, UUP 3, Alliance 2, People Before Profit 2, ANPTU 1. Certainly ANPTU believe they can increase. Mm-hmm. ANPTU do believe they can increase. They believe there is a tide of support for them. People Before Profit, you had Eamon McCann running the last time, obviously one of the absolute national centrepieces of People Before Profit, a very well-known man in the city, involved in the civil rights movement, right back involved in organising the march, which was interrupted by and is now characterised by Bloody Sunday. So Eamon McCann, very well-known there. He resigned the seat subsequently. Will People Before Profit hold that seat, possibly gain? And you have this interesting tussle between, as we said, Sinn Féin and the SDLP in Derry. Now, the interesting thing is, if you go back to 2014, there were 16 Sinn Féin councillors, 10 SDLP councillors. So SDLP gained one, Sinn Féin lost six. But of those gains, most of the Sinn Féin losses were to People Before Profit, to independents and to people like that. So it's not necessarily Sinn Féin to the SDLP, back to Sinn Féin again. It's a little bit more nuanced than that.
We're seeing more of that now than you might have historically. Okay, so it's the single transferable vote system. People vote one for their first preference, two, three, four, and down the line as far as they wish to go. And you choose, you know your own electoral area, and that's the area within which you vote, obviously, Donald.
Yeah, okay. It's the same. We have the electoral areas here, then they become municipal districts, and the DEAs north of the border is the same. So if you live in Castle Derg, you'll vote for one set of candidates. If you live in Artigarvan, you'll vote for another set of candidates. If you live in the centre of Derry, you'll vote for another set of candidates.
Now, another thing is that, and it was a bit controversial in Britain, well, sorry, actually, I believe it were England, where the Tories were decimated, you need photo ID to vote.
In general, yes. Now, we know from our own experience here, in many cases, particularly in small local areas, the agents who are at the desk will be local community stalwarts who will know an awful lot of the people that are coming. So in many cases, people will know you by name. The advice always would be bring photo ID, have it in your pocket. I always do. I rarely, if ever, have to actually take it out of my pocket, but I always have it in the pocket just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, okay. And I think there might even be just an extra emphasis on that this time around, but I take your point. Okay. Right, we'll be continuing our coverage, obviously, of these elections. I think they're important on a number of levels, and we'll throw up interesting stories, Donald, as they always do. Voting takes place, as you corrected me on correctly, 18th of May, then the voting, which we're more interested in, of course, on the 19th of May, the day after the election, and things should be settled relatively quickly, Donald, would you say?
It will go into the weekend, I suspect. I suspect we will find ourselves, inevitably what will happen is, we know it here, Greg, you've done enough of them as I have myself, and people will have heard them over the years. It'll start off slow, and then counts will start coming in thick and fast, and we'll start anticipating counts at about midday. They'll actually start arriving at about 3 or 4, and it'll go into that night, and probably the last few seats won't be decided until into Saturday, and possibly into Saturday afternoon, maybe even Sunday, but you'd certainly hope to have a very clear picture by mid-Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, okay, and then obviously we'll see once the dust has settled what impact that has on the politics at a larger scale. Donald, for now again, thank you very much indeed. Okay, more dumping for no reason whatsoever. Councillor Terry Crossan joins us on the programme now, and we're talking about this one particular area, but unfortunately other councillors have been having to highlight dumping in their area as well. Terry, thanks for taking the call. Good morning to you.
You're welcome, Greg.
Right, this is on the Kerry Road. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
In the Icaheen Chapel area.
The Kerry Road is a small road up in the vicinity of the Icaheen Church. And this incident happened on Saturday afternoon. It happened in broad daylight. Clearly someone, they completely blocked the road with a number of bags. There were tires in it, and there were other odds and ends of, you know, not very nice waste. Someone came along in a car, obviously was unable to get past, had to get out of the car and move the bags and tires into the side of the road to enable them and other traffic to pass by.
It would make you wonder what's going on here, Terry. Is this because people have bagged it, right? And there seems to be a mattress there and tires there and a pillow, for crying out loud. Do you think someone has gathered this up around their house and drove up this road and dumped it? Or do you think some person out there has paid someone to take the rubbish away from them? Not an official outfit who wouldn't be at this crack, don't get me wrong, but someone who's pulled up with a van, gone up the road a bit and just chucked it out. I mean, if someone paid someone to remove this, it would be very important information if they could let people know, because this is just disgusting here.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And, you know, I don't know. It could be either or. In my eyes, it's just another episode of shameful disregard for the community and for the environment. And when you have the GAA Club and other wee community groups out every weekend doing their own wee cleanups in their own areas, and then to get, you know, activity like what has happened here at the weekend, it's an absolute downright disgrace. And anybody who comes on any of that should and has any information as to who is involved or what's involved or cars involved should make a report to either the Gardaí or to anybody, to me, to the Donegal County Council or whoever, but they should be exposed at every opportunity.
Yeah, because they're crapping on the whole community. If people will excuse me for putting it in such a crude manner, this is a quiet rural road. Well, it's a back road, sorry. It's not a quiet rural road because, you know, a lot of people live up there. As you say, a car came across this, but others live in that area too. Fair play to the litter warden for coming out and getting shot of it. But, it's as I say, there's a lot of people live up there.
Yeah. And when you mention the litter warden there, like, I have had occasions of incidents that have happened over weekends when you would imagine the central officers would be off air or approachable or uncontactable. But I have to say, at every opportunity, that on every occasion that I have had to contact them, they have been more than quick to respond to clean up incidents of this nature, and they are to be commended on every occasion.
We need to see more people caught, more enforcement, big fines, name and shame. And I'm not that type of person, calls for that type of stuff, but everything else doesn't seem to be working, Terry. You know, it obviously is going to come down to enforcement and hitting people in the pocket, because nothing else seems to be getting through to this small group of individuals.
Yeah, we don't have any other choice. We have no other line of action. We have to try to trace whoever it is, and we have to bring them to book on this. And as I say, there's no other way that we can get this stamped out.
All right, OK. Councillor Crossan, thanks for bringing it to our attention. Fair play to the council who cleared that up quickly, but the imagery is not pleasant at all. It's just really effectively a two-fingered salute to anyone who lives in our county, in our region. It's the Kerry Road near Inchiheen Chapel, I think it is. Or is it Inchiheen? Inchiheen, anyway, I'll go with Inchiheen. And it's been cleared up, but it's in the pictures, there's a pillow, there's a dirty mattress, there's a number of tires, there's four or five that I can see, perhaps more bags, big bags actually, of stuff, whatever it is. And it's just absolutely disgusting that someone would do that to the people in that area. But it's not the first reasonably large-sized illegal dump we've seen on our roads of late. Maharabeg School says this listener, when the school starting times and closing times, the speed limit is only 60, might teach them to slow down in future passing the school. And I get that and I understand that. But a little bee I've had in my bonnet in the past is that sometimes when Easter holidays are on, the lights are on, when no one's home, so to speak, when the summer holidays are, sometimes you see these 60 kilometre speed signs continue to come on. sometimes when the clocks go back, they're not running at the right times. I think motorists deserve a fair crack of the whip as well to make sure the lights are on when they need to be on. But our listener is insisting that the lights weren't on. And maybe at that school, it should be obvious that the school's open. I don't know. It's a tough one. It really is a tough one because I slow down outside the two schools I'd pass. I'm not an angel, by the way, but the two schools I would pass would be Lurgy Brack and Lahey National School. And every single time it seems that I slow down to the 60, every car passes me, and you feel like an Egypt sometimes slowing down because all the other cars fly past you. But anyway, a caller says, in relation to sport, the GEA schedule needs a full revamp and changed until later in the summer. We all like the long summer evenings going to matches on a Sunday only. Okay, more comments on that, by the way. We talk about everything here. Maybe we should talk a little bit more about sport. That's why it's great to have Brendan Devaney in, but maybe lots of you out there were watching the soccer. I'll call it the soccer to avoid any confusion. The boxing, there was big boxing on over in Mexico. Anything you just want to talk about, you know, it doesn't just have to be the usual stuff. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and text that number, or give us a call in 074 91 25,000. Right, Alan McManaman joins us now. Alan, how are you getting on?
Afternoon, Greg. How are you? Or morning still, sorry.
It is indeed. Normally it's me who gets my mornings and afternoons mixed up. Okay, you've been having your say on the parking in the Twin Towns. Do you think, what's your sense on the ground, your former election candidate yourself, involved in the community, do you think what's going on at the moment is the best of a bad lot, or would you favour a longer grace period, or what's your views generally? I don't want to put any words in your mouth either.
Well, to be fair, Greg, this is something that, as you said earlier in your show this morning, that Shane McConnell and McConnell's Butchers have brought up in terms of what actually happened. This is ongoing, in fairness, and it's been going on for years, and it still really hasn't been properly addressed. You know, the roads and the parking issues in Ballybofey and Stranraer has been a disaster for many years, not just recently. The machines and the warden issue, I mean, yeah, it is part of the problem, but it needs to be people to sit down and actually look at it. This thing about the Chamber of Commerce, a liaison of the Chamber of Commerce, not every business in the town is involved in the Chamber of Commerce. You know, and when businesses bring up their concerns, as Jean rightly did, it needs to be taken seriously. You know, and I was kind of taken aback by some of the comments made this morning, you know, that was kind of dismissing what Shane had brought up, and it was very valid. I mean, I reached out to Shane as well, and I just said, anything I can do to help. You know, a couple of pragmatic things to look at would be the actual machines in the towns, they can be reprogrammed so that people can punch on their registration if they needed to and get a free ticket. You know, a fee-free ticket. So it would allow them 15, 20 minutes or whatever. This 10-minute thing has been bandied around quite a lot, you know. But even Patrick said this morning, Councillor McGowan said this morning, there is no free parking in Ballybofey. You know, this grace period is, I don't know where it's at. I've never seen any of the bylaws or anything to say that.
Well, people can actually do that. Well, he has checked and he seems satisfied that there is 10 minutes. In other words, if you're parked outside the Hatter or wherever, that the warden, he or she, will scan your number plate, and that person can't issue a ticket to you on that same machine for another 10 minutes. That's the contention.
Yeah, if he's satisfied with that, that's fine. That doesn't address the substantive issue that it's going on, that it's happening. People are getting ticketed fairly regularly. Listen, I used to live on Donegal Street, and even though I was a resident in Donegal Street, I got a parking fine, even though I parked outside where I live. And residents on Donegal Street and different streets are regularly getting ticketed.
So what needs to be done then? Because the argument from the councillor as well is that it's some of the most affordable parking that you will find. You know, can we expect everything for free? Plain devil's advocate here, by the way. Don't like getting a ticket myself, don't get me wrong. But I mean, like, are we just maybe it's that old adage, you know, I'll only be 2 minutes, but we have to pay our way if we want the roads kept clean and what have you.
I genuinely don't think anybody has an issue with paying their way. Mm. What I do have an issue with is if that gentleman was going into the butcher's the last day to pick up a bit of meat or going into the chemist to collect a prescription, that they have to spend time going to some of the machines that are not working.
Listen,
by the way.
You know, let's talk through that scenario because you're spot on there, right? If there is a butcher shop or a chemist or something on the main street and I have to pull in, I don't know if I'll be out of there under 10 minutes, but I only have to pick up a few pork chops and a string of sausages, right? I'm not going to walk 50 yards up the road, get a ticket, put it on my windscreen, go into the shop, come out and go about my business. I might go to some place that's a little bit out of town or with free parking because that's just human nature. Yeah. I shouldn't, but I probably will because I'm a lazy git, Alan. Right? So that is that is a competitive disadvantage then to the chemist or the butchers that I talk of, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but my point is, though, if you're going to the chemist to pick up a prescription, you know, you could go to a machine. Very often the machines don't work in the town, by the way. And I've had this many days I go on there. You know, every week I go on and I get a parking thing for me, one screen. But you know, a lot of the time it doesn't actually work, you know. And my whole ultimate thing around this is it's not working. It hasn't worked, you know. So when it's not working and it hasn't worked, then whatever about reviewing it, it needs to be sat down with the people that are actually it's affecting, i.e. the business on the streets and the back streets and all the rest.
But do you know who's rubbing their hands together, Alan? It's the businesses on the outskirts of towns that have the big resources behind them, the big car parks.
Absolutely.
They're rubbing their hands together. If you're going to have out-of-town planning like that, you have to advantage the heart of the town, don't you? You have to say, right, okay, what do we need to do to make sure these people can stay in business? Parking is a big issue.
It's a massive issue. I've actually put that in part of my comment under scenes, you know, that, you know, we're driving people away from the main street to go to the bigger places that have their own parking facilities, you know, and it's not good enough anymore. You know, the main street in Ballybuffet, we know about the dereliction in the town. We know that it's the highest vacancy rate nationally and has been for maybe 10 to 15 years. Nothing's been done about that. We have pedestrian crossings that there was uproar about because, again, it was just flighted in, stuck up, no signs, no nothing, and a lot of near misses and actually one accident. We have disability parking that's very rarely available. There's none in Stranorler. You know, with the residence parking, they're charged an absolute fortune. So this is just one of many, many issues. The warden, whatever about the wardens, and you know, people have said, oh, the warden are doing this, that, they're doing what they're told. So it's not a case of they're coming in and making up their own rules. They might seem a bit gung-ho at times. I get that. But at the same time, they have their rules and they're going by their rules. And it's an income generation thing. I know Patrick had mentioned, oh, it pays for other things. Yeah, so it does. But why can't we just not have a better system where we can look at liaison with the likes of Shane, the Hatter and all the rest? And I know there's an online petition taking place at the minute. But again, this is something that has been in the council and the councillor's remit for 15 years and it hasn't been adequately addressed.
Yeah, well, you have to listen to the business people. They're the ones paying for the water. They're the ones paying the rates and everything else. I can't see what harm could come from consultation. And we see different policies involved in different towns. Is Buncrana, is it working for the businesses up there? They've half an hour grace. Maybe 15 might be the sweet spot. But you just don't leave the status quo when it's clearly having an impact on people who are already struggling in this business environment. I mean, especially like a butcher's, right? I can't speak to their business model, but even just keeping everything chilled and cool, they're up against it, I'm sure, like all other businesses facing massive...
All the businesses on the main street.
Right.
You know, top of the main street has been decimated for years now with derelict properties, vacant properties and all that. And that's part of the problem is because people can't really get parking up there.
And the thing is the people of Letterkenny, right, they get all their services and there's half an hour free parking there. They get road sweepers. They get this, that and done. I don't think, and I'm not questioning Councillor McGowan's motivation here, but the council, if there's a shortfall, the council can spend a bit more money in the Twin Towns. It shouldn't have to be, well, you'll have to tolerate this parking or you won't get this, because nowhere else gets that. And everyone needs to be treated equally. All right, Alan, thanks for your input. I appreciate you coming on. Take care of yourself. Alan at Minimum there. If you have view, 086 60 25,000. This is your show. It's the All 9 Till Noon show on your radio station, Highland Radio. So have your say on those numbers. Now, you might remember going back some time ago, we had a couple of callers on, one from Donegal and one who was listening from Britain, who had issues with Revolut. They were scammed out of thousands of euro. And we kept on to Revolut, as we do off air. And when I say we, I mean Caroline, to try and get some sort of success for our listener who lost thousands, as I say. But we got a statement from Revolut, as I say, this is off the back of weeks of getting on to them. And their statement reads as follows. We are very sorry that our customers were targeted by ruthless and highly sophisticated criminals. Fraud is one of the largest categories of crime and can have a devastating impact on individuals and families, they say. Revolut's deeply concerned that large numbers of frauds are being enabled by fake phone calls and text messages. Scammers often pretend to be from a bank or recognisable utilities and services such as postal delivery services or tax authorities. It's vital that criminals are stopped at source and prevented from using convincing looking fake texts and phone calls. Otherwise, they will only step up their efforts to trick people into authorising fraudulent payments from their accounts. If in any doubt, customers can always engage securely with Revolut customer support in-app, meaning they know they are talking to us. We take our responsibility to protect and support our customers extremely seriously. We work continuously on systems, processes and people to combat these criminal gangs. Revolut also engages with industry partners and relevant authorities to warn customers about how to protect themselves from criminals trying to steal their money. When making an investment, we urge everyone to take steps to satisfy themselves that the person they're sending money to is legitimate, and we encourage customers to check the investment company is genuine and a regulated firm. If in doubt, customers should always seek trusted independent financial advice first. So unfortunately, despite all our efforts, we weren't table as of yet, and we're continuing to do so. We weren't able to get a resolution there. We do have further information from Revolut that they're working on, and the person was done by a very clever scam, because the scammers purported to be from the bank that they're actually with, and a second person claimed to be from Revolut, and they were ringing the person and saying, we're trying to stop this fraud on this account, you need to do this on that account. And in the whole process, what they were actually doing was accessing not just the Revolut account, but their actual main bank account as well. And they lost, what was it, 10 grand? Something incredibly significant anyway. Right, on our social media, we're using the hashtag, we are being asked to encourage you, the listener, to add your Donegal picks tagged hashtag Donegal and hashtag Donegal Day to get Donegal trending. So we love Donegal. A guest who we've had on this show actually not so long ago. They're trying to build up a bit of steam socially on Twitter. I think they are. Also check out Instagram. And if you've got any nice pictures that you've taken over the last day or two or in the past, you can post them to Twitter using the hashtag Donegal and hashtag Donegal Day and get us trending. It all helps, you know. You never know who might stumble across that picture you posted and say, you know what? I'm going to go to Donegal and sleep in a tent. If they can't get accommodation. A caller commented, just time for this before we take a break, rather than bringing someone on and rushing them. I'd like to comment on the green ideology that all government parties and opposition parties have all been so vocal and aggressively pushing in Ireland under the global umbrella of the alleged, so we know where they're coming from, climate change crisis for over a decade now. The EU and Irish parties, they say, TDs and county councillors right across the board have been extremely vocal about green ideology, renewables and the importance of a green, sustainable way of life for future generations' sake, guilt-tripping us about destroying the planet for future generations. Continually increasing and adding new carbon taxes to people in rural Ireland's home heating oil, gas and electricity for cooking, cars for transport and commercial vehicles for work, making our collective lives even more difficult by costing us all more to get to work and avail of health and basic business services in larger satellite towns such as Letterkenny, in a county which already has the lowest disposable income to begin with. The lowest wages too, by the way, new figures show us today. Why aren't these EU hypocrites and these Irish Green fanatical government and opposition ministers screaming day and night for a ceasefire and peace process to begin in the Ukraine-Russian-American-EU-NATO conflict, they describe it as? The previous 12 months of that conflict have devastated large parts of Ukraine, killed hundreds of thousands and caused more carbon emissions from military vehicles, missiles and bombs and weapons and what have you, being blown sky high, causing pollution not seen since World War II, not even including the eventual carbon cost of rebuilding that country when the war ends. It appears to be because the governments and vested interests orchestrated this human environmental catastrophe, and they're making way too much money and have suddenly forgotten their own green ideology, as it's not very convenient right now. Well, they would argue, and I take your points, and thanks for that, they would argue that civilization as we know it could well be at stake if Vladimir Putin were able to encroach beyond even Ukraine, though I doubt he has those resources any longer. All right, okay, that's that. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you very much to Niamh, who worked on the show, assisting Caroline Orr, who researched and produced. We'll be back with the 9 till noon show for a Tuesday tomorrow morning at 9.